thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, October 19th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The London School of Economics strongly refutes claims that President Mugabe holds an economics degree from the prestigious institution.
He has a master's degree in economics from the London School of Economics. So don't think you can lecture us about economics.
Opposition African Democratic Party leader Marcelina Chikasha says only new leaders with fresh ideas can bring Zimbabwe back to its former glory.
If we have the same current players that we have right now, I don't see the situation changing because these people lack integrity. But how do you just transform overnight?
And Zimbabweans are celebrating the Mighty Warriors weekend feat, qualifying for the 2016 Olympic Games.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The London School of Economics today strongly refuted claims that Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe holds an economics degree from the prestigious institutions. The claims were made by Mr. Mugabe's nephew and Indigenization Minister Patrick Juao Friday, as he boasted that no one could lecture Mr. Mugabe on how to handle Zimbabwe's crumbling economy.
My boss, the President of the Republic of Zimbabwe, Head of State and Head of Government, Commander in Chief of the Zimbabwe Defence Forces. He has a master's degree in economics from the London School of Economics. So don't think you can lecture us about economics. We understand it. And we understand economics from a real practical perspective, not bookish economics, ceteris paribus, all things equal. No, please. So please don't give us some of those arguments which are vacuous.
That was Indigenization Minister Patrick Juao addressing an empowerment conference in Harare last week.
But the London School of Economics issued a statement today saying, quote, "We have searched our records carefully and cannot find a record of Robert Mugabe having been awarded any degree from the London School of Economics and Political Science. President Mugabe may hold an economics degree from another London institution, but certainly not LSE," the statement ended. "Information obtained online, if accurate, shows President Mugabe holds an economics degree, which he got by correspondence from the University of London. Studio 7 was unable to get comment from Minister Juao."
Vice President Mphekezela Mpoko says banks should lower interest rates to enable businesses to access cheaper capital as they seek to revitalize the economy. Correspondent Taurai Shava brings us more.
Speaking during the launch of a $10 million small to medium enterprises national loan facility in Lawayo at the weekend, Vice President Mpoko said high interest rates are perpetuating the liquidity crunch that has seen businesses, both big and small, failing to access capital. Under the loan being availed by the CBZ Bank, individuals or companies can borrow up to $200,000 with a maximum repayment period of 24 months for capital projects and 12 months for working capital. Bank officials could, however, not immediately say how much interest would be charged on the loans. The vice president said, although the loan facility was national, business people in Ulaya and the surrounding areas should take advantage and grow their small to medium enterprises so as to help revitalize the regional economy.
Bulawayo will be developed by you who live in Bulawayo. A person from Rewa will prioritize developing his area, and a person from Binga will do the same. So you, who are from Bulawayo, must also think of Bulawayo first. When there is such a fund, which is available to everyone in the country, who is eligible? All of you here who are from Bulawayo must ensure that you access that money so you can help develop your area.
Facility is part of a $46 million loan which the CBZ received from the PTA Bank earlier this year. Divisional Director Molly Dingani of the CBZ's Business Banking Division said the bank made the facility available because it recognizes the important role that small to medium enterprises play in the economy.
Noted the importance of the sector, like I said before, the bank in its core strategy late last year decided to then form a specific division which is looking at micro, small to medium enterprises.
Small to Medium Enterprises Development Minister Stanley Sonyoni, who was also at the event, urged those in business as well as aspiring business people to be proactive, saying that they should not blame other people for their failure.
We are there for you, but you are the beginning and the end of your own business. Time for blaming other people has passed. This is the time to take responsibility. After you have taken responsibility, here is the opportunity.
Economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe acknowledges the importance of small to medium enterprises in driving the growth of economies and points to the example of countries like China, India and South Korea, whose economies have grown rapidly on the back of such businesses. Chitambara says the absence of adequate support by the government, coupled with other impediments like lack of requisite business skills and capital, have stifled the growth of small to medium enterprises in Zimbabwe. As the country's economic crisis continues, the formal sector keeps dwindling, with the informal sector and small to medium enterprises now providing sustenance to millions of unemployed Zimbabweans. Meanwhile, Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa at the weekend also commissioned the 42-kilometer Mcharezi water pipeline, which brings water to Mzimwane Dam, one of Bulawayo's main water sources. The $24 million project, which was started in 2007 and completed in 2013, could not be commissioned as a result of political bickering between ZANU-PF and the MDCT during the inclusive government, with the then Water Minister Samuel Sipepangomo at one time being blocked from officially launching the project by suspected ZANU-PF supporters and war veterans. Water and Climate Minister Opam Chinguri Kashiri said the project would help ease Bulawayo's perennial water problem.
The Mchabezi pipeline is a project that brings hope and joy to the people of Bulawayo and the communities along the pipeline.
The pipeline brings 17,000 cubic liters of water, nearly 20% of Bulawayo's water requirements. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shala.
The leader of the opposition African Democratic Party, Marcelina Chikasha, says only new leaders with fresh ideas can bring Zimbabwe back from the brink. Chikasha says she's skeptical about working with former Vice President Joyce Mujuru in an opposition coalition being suggested by many to try and wrestle power from ZANU-PF in 2018. She says Mrs. Mujuru is part of the older generation that she says have overstayed in power and have failed the nation. Chikasha speaks exclusively with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu in our first installment on the state of the nation, where we'll be reaching out to political leaders to speak about the way forward for Zimbabwe, which has been described by some think tanks as a failing nation. Blessing first asked her about her views on the various crises affecting the nation and the possible way forward.
Basically, I'd like to start by saying that the problems we're currently facing, we're facing deflation, which is any country's worst nightmare. It leads to deindustrialization, falling profits, increased defaults on loans, unemployment, etc., etc. We're also looking at a situation where we have uncertainty in areas of policy. You know, we talk about indigenization, there's no clarity, there's no fairness, and we need to shape policies like that so that they, you know, they're very transparent and everybody can understand them and wants to participate in the economy. We also have an uncertain political environment where there's factional fighting in the ruling party. There's a splintered and fragmented opposition, and the, you know, they, no one wants to invest or work in an environment like this.
But does ADP have economic blueprints to propose to Zimbabweans to say this is what we are going to do, like you are telling us?
We're currently working on it. So I've given you snippets of what's in our blueprint. We're consulting widely, and we'll unveil it at the time that we see fit to unveil it.
Let's talk about the political crisis as well. How can it be resolved?
Yes, there is a lot of fighting, and it's very unfortunate indeed, because the majority of the people are the ones that are suffering. You know, the ones that are actually involved in the skirmishes and the fighting and the factionalism, their lives are continuing, and they're just the same, if not improving, because now there's a lot of loopholes for them to access ill-gotten wealth. So, you know, if we have the same current players that we have right now, I don't see the situation changing, because these people lack integrity, and you cannot suddenly overnight, which is what I often say, for example, about my interview, to say, but how do you just transform overnight? I just think the current crop of leadership needs to go. We need a new dynamic force. We need people with values. We need people who have a different mindset. And I believe we also need a younger generation-led government rather than what we've tried and tested for the past 35 years, which is the older generation.
Let's step back a little. Are you saying you're not willing to work with Maim Juru, say, in a coalition?
You know, it depends on what the objective of a political party is. If your objective is to just get into power or to unseat ZANU-PF, then I believe that, yes, a coalition is very much needed, because we've seen, you know, even in Guinea and, you know, where there's like 7 political parties, which is nothing compared to Zimbabwe's 40 or 50 opposition parties that we've got at the moment, that the more splintered and fragmented you are as an opposition, the harder it is to unseat a government, you know, that's incumbent government. But our objectives as ADP, I would say, are we really in it, you know, with just the sole objectives, like we saw with the MDCT, of pointing fingers and saying these guys need to go? Or do we have a plan that spans past 2018, past 2023, the next 50 years, the next 100 years? That is who we actually are. So when we form a coalition, what are we saying? Are we giving up on our own plans or our vision to say, let's just unseat ZANU-PF, and then what comes after that? I think it just depends on the objectives of the different individuals.
Is Zimbabwe ready for a woman president?
I would leave that question to be answered by the people. But from my own perspective, I have not had any objections to me as a person, or to the fact that I'm a woman when I've gone out to meet the people.
That was Marcelina Chikasha, the leader of the opposition African Democratic Party, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. For a longer interview, please visit our webpage, www.voazimbabwe.com.
I am Blessing Zulu. Starting this week, I'll be bringing you a range of interviews from ZANU-PF and Zimbabwe's opposition parties on their solutions to the country's economic and political crisis. Don't miss this very important series. Be done to resuscitate the economy.
Yeah, what's the point of economy? The economy is more than the way it works. They are selling their goods for them to survive.
And tomorrow we will feature Egypt Zine Munenza of the African National Party.
Meanwhile, opposition leader Jacob Ngarivume of Transform Zimbabwe says the ruling ZANU-PF government should resign because it has failed to provide food for its people. Ngarivume says all the country's provinces are facing serious food shortages, with some children already dropping out of school. On Saturday, the Southern Eye quoted Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa as telling the people of Matabeleland South that the government is facing serious challenges to secure food for the over 600,000 people desperately in need of food aid. Ngari Vume tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that the reality on the ground is dire.
It's not true that an estimated 600,000 people are in dire need of food assistance. It's more than that. We have millions of Zimbabweans who are starving, who need assistance. But it is interesting to say, okay, sure, we have to focus on the food security situation and to put in place mitigation measures demonstrates a failure of leadership. You know, we know that people in drought-hit countries, in drought-hit regions, children are dropping out of school. It's a clear sign of leadership failure. The government should have done its leadership properly, focused that there's going to be drought, and then put mitigation measures in place, but they have not done that. And this is precisely the problem we have in the country.
What would you tell the government to do to alleviate this problem?
Firstly, I would say the government must resign. If it was a respectable government, they would resign because they failed the people of Zimbabwe over and over again. I call on them to resign. But knowing that they will not resign, what would be noble and good for them to do is to bring to the table all Zimbabweans to say, okay, how can we solve this problem? But the challenge we have is that all the actions they take are partisan. If they get the food assistance, if they get the food, they only give the food out to ZANU-PF supporters. This is what they've been doing throughout the country.
That was Transformer Zimbabwe President Jacob Ngari Vume in Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
stigma and complacency threaten the gains made so far in the fight against HIV and AIDS.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The World Health Organization says road traffic crashes continue to take an unacceptably high toll, with 1.25 million people dying each year from accidents, which are largely preventable.
Human Rights Watch is calling on Ugandan authorities to stop obstructing peaceful political gatherings, especially with the use of tear gas, saying such interference violates people's rights to free assembly and expression.
And recent fighting between government forces and opposition RENAMO fighters in Mozambique is increasing the influx of asylum seekers into Malawi.
In our health segment today, Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalieli reports on stigma and complacency threatening gains made in the fight against HIV and AIDS.
That Zimbabwe has made progress in reducing HIV infection in the country over the years is a feat many applaud. But some health experts warn, if unchecked, stigma, discrimination, and complacency could reverse the gains. Dr. Beth Barr, the new country director at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, says complacency is the irony of progress.
It's partly because of the remarkable progress that's been made that there sometimes is a perception that, you know, both locally and internationally, that the challenge of HIV has been solved.
While access to treatment has prolonged and improved the quality of lives and appearance of many living with HIV, Dr. Barr cautions against falling for the facade that the battle against HIV or AIDS has been won.
There's absolutely no room for complacency when HIV still causes over 100 deaths a day just in Zimbabwe.
Risky behavior among many youth groups in the country are concerning to Dr. Barr, though she says she's skeptical about the impact of the extent of the so-called sex parties that Zimbabwe's youth are reportedly engaging in.
We have trained the data collectors to be very sensitive how they work with people to gain information. So I think that will, first of all, provide more details as to the scope of such a problem if it exists. Unfortunately, it's sometimes a challenge anywhere in the world for young people to fully understand the consequences of their behavior.
When it comes to stigma, Dr. Barr says she's hopeful that more access to treatment will reduce stigma.
When you make treatment widely accessible, you minimize a lot of the more obvious signs of HIV that people were familiar with, like in the 80s and 90s.
The home environment and family members often present the strongest source of stigma to someone living with HIV, says Dr. Barr, often causing many to hide their status and avoid taking their medication.
I think this within-family stigma is probably the single biggest threat to both starting and keeping people on ART. People, if they can't trust their family members with their HIV status, they'll be scared to keep their pill bottles, their health cards at home, with fear that somebody might find them.
Dr. Barr says for the 90-90-90 strategy, an ambitious UNAIDS treatment target to help end AIDS by identifying people with HIV and increasing access to treatment, to be successfully met by 2020, stigma of all kinds should be addressed and eliminated.
To reach the 90-90-90 targets, I think it's important that stigma continue to be addressed and to continue the emphasis that we must be open and accepting of all people with HIV so that they feel safe to learn their status, go for testing, to seek care and treatment, and to remain consistent in their use of ARVs.
The key to ending stigma and the discrimination that comes with it worldwide, says Dr. Barr, is encouraging more people to speak openly about being HIV positive as they would if they had diabetes, high blood pressure, or cancer.
When you see very normal, healthy people acknowledging their HIV status and living with a very positive mindset, it does reduce that fear of HIV quite a bit.
Dr. Barr has been involved in fighting HIV for more than 15 years, working in several African countries, including Botswana, Malawi, and Tanzania. She says her goal is to ensure that funding to fight HIV in places like Zimbabwe continues by noting the impact of programs such as PEPFAR, the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief.
By demonstrating that PEPFAR funding and efforts in Zimbabwe are both cost-efficient and high-impact, we then help make it clear that investing in HIV services and health systems in Zimbabwe is a very powerful and effective way to address the global HIV epidemic.
This is Ndimiake Mokalielie reporting for Studio 7 from Washington.
And now, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States believes that the rights to freedom of expression and assembly are rights that all people should enjoy, online and offline. Americans and people around the world, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power, have a tremendous amount to gain from a free and open internet, from the broader sharing of information and ideas to more markets for businesses to a more transparent and accountable government. The internet plays a critical role in supporting democratic activity of non-governmental organizations and individuals. During a recent UN General Assembly event on internet freedom, Ambassador Power noted that there is significant correlation between governments that use the internet to repress their own citizens and NGOs, and those same governments using the internet to launch cyber attacks on other countries and to hack the websites of foreign nationals and companies. During that event, in recognition of the importance a free internet plays in safeguarding human rights, Ambassador Power announced a new initiative called LIFT, Leading Internet Freedom Technology Initiative. The goal is for LIFT to foster innovative next-generation technologies to circumvent internet censorship. The U.S. is launching LIFT with a $10 million investment this year, raising its annual support for internet freedom to $33 million. The potential impact of these new technologies really can be profound, said Ambassador Power. They have the potential to make the internet inherently more resistant to control. These new technologies could help millions of users gain access to the global internet free of censorship. They complement the United States' support of secure communication technologies, as well as its broader support for civil society development and the digital and physical safety of human rights defenders. The United States cannot undertake this task alone. More governments should consider joining the Freedom Online Coalition and the Open Government Partnership. In addition, technology companies should embrace the UN guiding principles on business and human rights. These companies are also uniquely positioned to leverage their own technological innovation in order to preserve the free and open Internet. It's important to remember that history is on the side of freedom. Every previous effort to destroy or curb new technologies enhancing freedom of speech, said Ambassador Power, have eventually failed. So even as repressive governments are pouring resources into trying to control the Internet, the odds and time favor freedom.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will lead discussions about the mighty warriors making history at the weekend.
To join our discussion, text us on 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from the studios.
In sports news, it's good news. Zimbabweans are celebrating the Mighty Warriors Weekend feat. More from Michael Cariati.
These were the world celebrations which rocked the Rufaro Stadium soon after the final whistle that signified the Mighty Warriors had qualified for the 2016 Olympic Games. The celebrations have not yet died down after that famous 1-0 victory over the Lionesses of Cameroon gave the women's soccer team qualification on the away goals rule after the two teams had settled for a 2-0 draw on aggregate. The players could not hold their tears of joy, and Captain Felistas Mzomboni says they are happy to have achieved this feat, adding that it had not come all that easy.
I feel so much excited because this is our first time to qualify for the Olympics. It's our first time in history, so I can say this game today, it was a tough game for us, but we managed to adjust and control the game.
What a way to do it than in front of thousands of soccer fans who thronged the stadium, including the Minister of Sport and Recreation, Makosini Ntlongwane, who hailed the achievement of the country's girl child.
Zimbabwe finally has been able to break the jinx. And this is important, especially being done by the Mighty Warriors. The girl child has amply demonstrated that they are able to do it. They are able to do it sometimes even better than the men or the boys.
Zipa Chief Executive Officer Jonathan Mashingaidze says the success of the Mighty Warriors is the right tonic Zimbabwe needs after enduring years of frustration through the Warriors' failure to qualify for any big international competition like the World Cup.
I believe this is the right tonic for local football, given that there's a lot of challenges, but the focus is excellency. And the girls have said today that let's put aside whatever is outside the excellency and concentrate on excellence.
Ntlongwane says he will be consulting his colleagues in government to see how best they can reward the first ever Zimbabwean team to qualify for the Global Sports Festival.
I'm going to be meeting with my colleagues and we mobilize to make sure that for this game, it doesn't go unrecognized. That we're going to do without a doubt.
Mashingaidze said the cash-strapped Zipa will also be talking with government on how best to make the Mighty Warriors happy.
Thank you, Michael. Unfortunately, time has run out, but before we go, a quick recap of today's top stories.
The London School of Economics strongly refutes claims that President Mugabe holds an economics degree from the prestigious institution.
Opposition African Democratic Party leader Marcelina Chikasha says only new leaders with fresh ideas can bring Zimbabwe back to its former glory.
Thank you for joining us this evening. I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele, hosted by me. This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.